The Environment, Agriculture, and Flooding Subcommittee will now come to order. Lexi, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan.
Here.
Vice Chair Cheney.
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Alexander. Representatives Brannon.
Here.
Posada Cabrera.
Here.
Daley.
Here.
Diamond, excused. Fine.
Here.
Hardy.
Here.
Ponchofsky.
Here.
Lamarca. Lamarca. McFarland. McFarland. Mello.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Humphrey.
Here.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Tomko, excused. Trunow.
Here.
We have a quorum, Chair.
Excellent. Members and announcements, please remember to make sure to place your cell phones and other electronic devices to silent, or you may turn them off during the duration of our meeting. Good morning, members, and welcome to the Environment, Agriculture, and Flooding Subcommittee. Today, we'll have the opportunity to have a presentation from the Department of Environmental Protection, which will be given by John Truitt, who is Deputy Secretary of the Regulatory Programs. He'll be providing us an update on the 404 program. Following the presentation, there will be ample time for members to pose any questions you may have. Deputy Secretary Truitt, you are recognized.
So jumping right into it, what is Section 404? So Section 404 of the Clean Water Act is a program to regulate the discharge of dredge or fill material in waters of the United States. The Environmental Protection Agency is technically the top federal agency with jurisdiction, but the Army Corps does the permitting in most of the states in the country, 47 states to be precise. So in 2018, the legislature passed House Bill 7043, which authorized us to start looking at assuming 404. That was a lengthy process. As you can see, we achieved the program in December of 2020. I did want to talk briefly about what that entails. So once we had the direction to move forward for assumption, there's a very large package that has to go up to the federal government. It gets put out on public review. There's a potential for challenges there. And we have to be at least as protective as the federal government to assume the 404 program. What that means is if there are any criteria in federal 404 permitting that we don't have at the state level, we have to adopt those. But a key note is that our delineation method to delineate wetlands must go at least as landward as the federal government. So we went with a two-program approach, and what do I mean by that? So the Environmental Resource Permit is the state permitting regime that we've had for decades to cover waters of the state. And as a reminder, waters of the state will always be more expansive than waters of the United States, because waters of the state include waters of the United States. So when we looked at the 404 program compared to ERP, there were a lot of similarities and there's a lot of duplication. There are a few different items that stand out in 404 that are not in the ERP program. So rather than entirely revamping the entire state's ERP approach, we wanted to keep the delineation method, but that's why we have a two-program approach. So you might get one document, but it'll have an ERP authorization in it and a separate 404 authorization in it. Two of the big things that are very important under the federal 404 program is a mandatory requirement to do avoidance and minimization. So if you're looking at a particular parcel and say you have 100 acres that you want to develop, but you're only looking at 50 acres of wetlands, trying to figure out a way to maneuver that development such that you impact the least amount of wetlands possible. That's a requirement under 404, which is different than our state level ERP. Another one is 404 actually provides Endangered Species Act protections. That was an interesting problem. We were first looking at 404 assumption that we're able to work out with a programmatic approach. So currently what we do, if an application comes in and we use the GIS maps that the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission have showing where endangered species are, we forward it over to our sister agency, FWC, and we can use technical advisory help from them and with Fish and Wildlife Service to get conditions in that then the applicant would have Endangered Species Act protections. So what were we expecting when we got it? And I think this gets to the heart of probably most of the questions I'm going to get today. So we used the Corps' previous five-year permitting data and their GIS tools to estimate the workload. That is what we saw on an average number per year coming out of the Corps. 226 general permits, 544 individual permits, for a total of 770. So that's what we were planning around when we were putting this package together in 2019 and 2020 to send to the feds. It's important to distinguish between those two permit types. For anyone that hasn't done this type of permitting, the general permits are the ones that are fairly standardized. So you look at, you know, residential home impacting less than 0.5 acres. There's standard conditions. It can get out the door a lot quicker. The individual permits are the ones that go out to comment from various public agencies, go out for public comment as well, and come back. So individual permits are going to have an automatic, at least built-in time of 60 days just sitting out on comments. Whereas general permits, a lot of those do not have notice provisions. So they can be moved through much faster. So using those estimates, that's how we put our package together. And the Corps had represented to us that annually, they verbally told us they did issue less than 1,000 permits a year. So by looking at their tools and their numbers, that's why we stuck with that. So once we had the program, when it's approved by the EPA and put in the Federal Register, there's not a transition period or a glide path under federal regulations. It's literally a switch flips. All of the permit applications that are with the Corps, regardless of stage in the application process, if they fall into assumed waters, all those waters that we have now as the state, the Corps puts pencils down and hands us all of those. We had weekly meetings with the Corps the week before Assumption. Our last spreadsheet said 176 applications. We got 500. That was far higher than was expected. 211 of those, which we spent the month of January sorting through, we figured out were not supposed to be ours, so they went back to the Corps. So again, that was an unanticipated change. Now, overall, so we've had it 9 months. We have received, including the 380 that came from the, 380 that came from the Corps that stayed, 3,098 applications. So three times more than we'd ever even remotely anticipated. So as of last week, these are our numbers. I say last week because obviously we put the program or the presentation together and then it goes through various levels. We had 1,851 still pending. 30 individual permits had gone out the door, general permits issued, 178. The no permit required letter, which is saying you're not impacting WOTUS, go forth and do your project, 166. Denied, 28, and 845 have been withdrawn. So again, a 300% increase over what the estimated numbers coming in are. Now, of all of those categories of issued, when you kind of squish them together there, 60% of those have come out since mid-July. So obviously we had some learning curve at the beginning of January. January and February were almost awash given the sorting through all of the applications that came in and figuring out what was appropriate and what wasn't. And then if your purposes was new to us. So you saw as we shifted resources over and we had an LBR request, and thank you for the 17 positions we got, which are almost, they're either all filled or they're in the process of going through the paperwork to be filled that we got July 1. Refined our reviewing methods, and now we're starting to see projects and the similarities and increase the speed. So that's why I'm saying with the bulk of those issuances coming over the last 3 months, that is the reason why. So the next logical question, okay, from where we're at now, how do we get better? So we've increased our training regimen. We were just doing every Tuesday, there was a big Teams meeting where all people would get together and go over the applications that were new or novel or we had questions. Aside from that, we now have enough people in each of the districts trained that they can train their own people. So we're not just relying on the subset in Tallahassee to train all of my regulatory districts. And we've got roughly 251 people touching 404 at some level around the agency. Now that some of those may just be processing to take the work off the permit processors and that. The big key to the number of people are the certified wetland evaluators. Those are the people that under the way the EPA approved our program, they have to go visit a site in the field and verify the line. That's the big key. We have 68 of those as of Friday last week. And those are also being able to be trained now at the district level because we have enough experience. So we can drastically increase that number quickly, which is very beneficial. We've also worked with the water management districts. They have a lot of their wetland delineators. They still follow the 62-340 rule. They've gone to the trainings and they are also certified wetland evaluators. Under the federal approval process, it has to be a DEP employee that does that verification. So we've worked out a process where Northwest Florida Water Management District, we already have a few people on our books as OPS employees so that we don't have to duplicate site visits. And we've talked to the other water management districts and that's in the process now. We hope to see those in place before the end of November. And again, it's to streamline the fact of why would you have two people visit a site when you don't need to. So we're also working on the NSTAF and the federal reporting commitments. We have an annual report. Every delegated program that comes down from the feds has an annual report. Our first one just went up in September, the first one for 404. We got some questions back from EPA. So obviously with our first one up, we're interested to see what they're looking at. So we're working on that. We have a 404 lead position. It's my Southeast District Director, who's actually in town this week, has come up to work with the division to find increased efficiencies. He is an ERP background permitter. He came in as low level and worked his way all the way up to being a director. Southeast covers that, you know, Miami area and all of down there, which has a lot of the waters that can be problematic with canals and those types of things. So his viewpoints are going to be very important. And he brings that the district boots on the ground mindset back to the what I like to think of as more academic folks in the division level that look at the rules. We do have a request for 23 new positions in our LBR this year. Again, this is to increase the staffing assistance to the district and the technical experts that we might need in division to answer those questions and the audit process. And I would also point out, as I mentioned earlier, we work heavily with our sister agency, FWCC, in terms of their species experts. And I believe they have an LBR request related to this that'll also help speed up the process of 404 processing because we have to have those species comments and conditions in our permits to ensure that they're valid when they go out the door. So where we're at right now, when you think about it, based on the numbers we had coming in, when I looked at them last week and then looked back at June, you were looking at, you know, roughly time to process. And by time to process, that's a number that's important to make a distinction. That means when the application's complete. Some people confuse that meaning. It came in the door. Why haven't I seen it? We were operating under the first in, first out provision, right? We had 380 some applications that came from the Corps. Some of those people had been waiting at least 18 months. So the idea at the beginning was, let's make sure the people that have been waiting the longest are getting their permits and getting those out the door. We have obviously more people trained up, so we don't have to follow strictly that rule. But roughly early in the year, you were looking at 160 days or so. And as I looked at it last Friday, it was about 54. So we're still working at driving that down. But like I said, I think when you look at the trends from we've had and the majority coming out since July, a lot of good experience in getting all those people trained up and understanding exactly all the nuances of this position or of this program. We've also been working with EPA. There's been a few permits that have gone up to EPA. They have a mandatory oversight requirement on certain types of permits, general categories, if it can impact endangered species, if it can impact waters of another state or tribal, or if it hits historical resources. EPA gets an automatic review. We ship it up to them. They get a 30-day period. They can either say nothing, which means the permit goes out the door. They can give us a comment, which we have to incorporate, or they can object, which removes the permit from our purview and hands it back to the Corps. None of the ones we've sent up have had even a single comment. So I take that as we're getting it right. And the number that are going out the door, no one's challenged one yet. So that's my other point, is I think we're getting it right and we're obviously getting better. But obviously, we're gonna work on, you know, looking at other efficiencies and putting in metrics so we can start driving these things down. And I do want to stress that it is a new program, will get better. But the methods that we're using to improve this program are the methods that we've used to improve every other program in regulatory, just like when ERP was first created, just like when we got the NPDES permit processing program from the federal government. So I know it works, because if you look at all of our other programs lumped together, it's 16.7 days time to process cumulatively across all the other programs. So I know the process works. That's why I know when a lot of people reach out to me, I get it. We're getting better, but we're seeing changes, and that's the important thing. So that was all I had formally, but happy for questions, Chair.
Thank you for the presentation, Deputy Secretary. Members, we're going to open it up for questions. Ranking Member Alexander, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Deputy Secretary. Thank you for being here today. And, you know, I was here in 2018 and actually voted for the codification of 7043. And I had some of my reservations, but I voted for it on the premise that there would be minimal physical impact. And so in regards to where we are now, you know, have there been any considerations about returning the program back to the EPA? I'd love to get your thoughts on that. And also making some other changes so that we can create some balance and create some continuity for the program. I know that some of the exacerbations in regards to FTEs are concerns for a lot of the members. We'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Ranking Member, there is not a thought to hand it back to the federal government, and I'll say why. If from December 23rd to today, I hadn't seen any change and improvement, then I might have a different thought or a different recommendation. But we've drastically improved, and with the training that we've put out and with this opportunity to leverage the assets in the water management districts, when you're looking at those, that's another 35 or so CWEs that can do site visits that we don't have to duplicate efforts on. I think it's only going to keep improving. Now, like I said, since we just submitted our annual audit report from EPA, and we'll see what the questions are, so I'm not sure exactly yet if they have any questions or concerns, so to speak, in terms of the operation or the lag time or anything like that. I would doubt not, because if you look when a permit comes in our door today, an individual permit, for example, versus if it came in the Corps' door today, ours would still come out quicker than theirs. The backlog was a stump that we had to climb over. We think the LBR ask is appropriate, especially with the way that we can now leverage these additional resources at the water management districts.
Members, questions? Representative Hardy, you're recognized.
Thank you. So my question is about the agency request for the 23 new positions. And I have here not only the bill analysis from HB 7043, which says that DEP indicated that the agency can absorb the additional workload within existing resources. I also have a letter from as recently as last November 2nd, 2020, in which then Secretary Valenstein basically rebutted all suggestions that FDEP lacks the resources to handle the assumption of the program. He said this is incorrect. And so what I'm wondering is, how can we reconcile that? I know that you said you got more applications than you anticipated getting, but Mr. Valenstein was saying this as recently as, you know, 11 months ago. And so I'm just trying to figure out, how do I reconcile those two things?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. Excellent question. 11 months ago is very important on this topic, because 11 months ago, we were still working under the assumed number that the Corps had provided to us. And so what we actually got was three times the number that he was basing that statement off of at the time, Representative.
Rep. Hardy for a follow-up.
Thanks. So let me put it to you this way. To the extent that applications exploded after the state took control of this program, do you think that that suggests anything about if there was a betting market about the permissiveness of how we would be implementing this permit program? Does that say anything about what folks expected of this program as operated by the state versus as operated by the federal government? And what implications might that have for the future of wetlands here in this state?
Deputy Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, it's a good question. I'm not going to speculate what they would think, but if you look at all of the permitting in my agency, including the ERP, which hasn't changed for decades, it went up in several of my districts 300% as well. I don't think anyone expected the development boom we saw during COVID, but in the fiscal year, when you look at last July to this July, we normally see, of all of regulatory and all our permit programs, 26 to 30,000 permits go out the door, and it was just close to 50,000 over that period. And I think if you check with the water management districts, who also do some ERP permitting, which again, that program hasn't changed, they saw similarly doubling and tripling of the input. So I don't think anyone could anticipate the building boom. The building boom and that development boom, I don't think is indicative that, oh, now Florida has the program, let's build. I don't think that's the case.
Representative Onfroy, you were recognized for a question.
Thank you so very much, Chair. Deputy Secretary, thank you so very much for that presentation. I have a question also. About 8 weeks ago, the courts ruled that we had to revert back to the rules that were in place before 404. And so I want to know how DEP has pivoted to go back to those rules. I have a series of questions, Chair, if that's possible.
You may.
Thank you, Chair. How has DEP pivoted to ensure that we're following the rules that we're supposed to follow now after the court ruling? The next question is, has the court ruling changed or modified how we are looking at the wetlands that we're currently having development going into? And I think I have, please explain how these new, how these rules are affecting your agency. Thank you.
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair. Representative. So the first question of the court vacatur in the Arizona District Court case of the Navigable Water Protection Rule, which came out, I believe, August 31st. I want to point out that this is not unique to the program of 404. Every federally delegated program has a provision somewhere in the Code of Federal Regulations that said, should there be any change to this part or any other applicable federal law or regulation, a state with a delegated program has 1 year to make any necessary rule changes or 2 years to make any necessary statutory changes. That provision is in 40 CFR, I think, 233 for the 404 program. So an immediate change, and this happens, like I said, in other programs, you'll see it in the Clean Air Act constantly throughout the course of a year, and it's not a question. I think it hit everybody's radar, obviously, because it's WOTUS and it's 404. That, when it changes at the federal level, it triggers an EPA requirement to tell us to change our program. The EPA has not done that yet. So we are currently operating under the rule as it existed when our program was approved, just like we would do with every other delegated program. I know the EPA has publicly stated they're going through a two-phase rulemaking process. They just submitted the rulemaking package to formally vacate the NWPR to the White House for its review. We would expect that out by the end of the year. When that occurs, it triggers the word that you see in the federal regulations that say promulgation of a new rule. I would assume we would see notification concurrent with that. EPA has not told us definitely, but that's my presumption. Then EPA has said next year they will do another rulemaking that will wind up cleaning up WOTUS yet again. The package they have right now in the vacatur, what it does, it takes it back to the 1986 rules as modified by Bayview, Swank, and Rapanos, which was the pre-2015 regime. So once they go through that vacation process, their ministerial act, I would assume that would trigger a notice to us, which would then trigger the provision for us to change the program.
Representative Onfroy for a follow-up.
Thank you so very much, Chair. So Deputy Secretary, we're looking at maybe 3 years out before you actually have to make an adjustment, because that's what it sounded like to me.
Deputy Secretary.
No, I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. So when the feds finish their vacation of the rule this fall, in theory, that'll promulgate back to the old pre-2015 regime. If they give us a notice then, that gives us a year, correct, to change. If they finish their other WOTUS rulemaking before our year is up, then that would be a new notice. And that's a question we've put to EPA. What happens if they overlap? I would presume, since it's just adopting federal regulations by reference, we can turn around a rule change like that fairly quickly. We have a fast-track rulemaking process in the state of Florida whereby you, if you're just pointing to a federal regulation, adopting it wholesale and not changing anything, it's fairly quick up and down process. It can be done in just a few months. But again, it's going to be based on EPA's timing and when they send us the notification under their regulations.
Vice Chair Cheney for a question.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan. Thank you, Secretary and Deputy, for that great presentation. Is there any way you can scope those 770 applications for us in terms of the percentage of land that is in Florida, or acreage, or, you know, 770 sounds like a lot, but can you put that in perspective for us?
Deputy Secretary.
I know my GIS folks can, Representative, and I do not want to guess on that. I mean, we see, again, when you look at general permits, a lot of those can be for half-acre impacts or less residential homes. There's also a general permit, for example, for linear facilities, which can be a power line. I know a general permit went out for a power line that was 100 miles. but it only impacted maybe 7 acres total because it's such a narrow, and they try and, you know, you don't want to put pilings in a wetland if you don't have to. It's not as supportive. I can get back to my GIS folks, though, Vice Chair, and find out that number.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Follow-up, Chair?
Vice Chair Cheney, follow-up.
Thank you. Can you give us an explanation for the reason for the 28 permit denials?
Deputy Secretary.
Generally speaking, Vice Chair, it fell into two major categories. There may have been a one-off. The first major category was that under our program, if we delineate with 62-340, it is presumed that all of the wetlands in that area are waters of the United States, and it is the applicant's burden to prove that it's not. And that, as we've processed, we've gotten better in terms of the communication with consultants on what we need to see to do that. Some of those have been in that category of not providing proof that it was not a water of the United States. Most of those denials were no permit required denials, which means, nope, you are impacting a WOTUS. You're going to have to come in and go through the permitting process. I think a small minority of the rest of those denials were applications for general permits that did not qualify for the general permit. So the denials primarily did not land in the area of, I'm trying to get an individual permit and I can't do it. It was either a, I don't think I need a permit, nope, you're wrong, you do. Or I don't need an individual, nope, you're wrong, you do.
Thank you. One more follow-up, Chair.
Vice Chair, for a follow-up.
Thank you. Do you have an anticipated volume moving forward, given that you were kind of surprised by the 3-time increase in volume at this point? Moving forward, where do you think you're going to end up?
Deputy Secretary.
Vice Chair, so with 9 months of data, obviously I can graph that out, and I know a lot of people are looking at 9 to 10 months, but we've got to remember the first couple months with a mandatory 60-day window, nothing can really go out the door. So I'm really looking at, like I said, since last July when it seems like we really got our feet hitting the ground. As of last Friday in October, we cranked out 50. So that was our most productive 2-week cycle, of any previously. And that kept pace with incoming applications. Over the last month, we've seen applications coming in start to level off. Now, it's only a month of data, so I'm not going to say that's going to carry forward. But in terms of the trends of development permits we've seen historically at the department, you usually see a decrease in the winter months on the development permits coming in. I'm not too sure why, because I would rather build in the winter than in the summer in Florida, being a native, but that's just me. So I don't think that's long enough to say a distinct trend. But I know over the last few weeks, we're matching what's coming in. And I think that's the point of leveraging the additional resources with the water management districts and the LBR request. That's what starts digging into the hole and make sure we're not just keeping an even keel and we're moving forward at better progress.
Thank you.
Representative Overdorf for a question.
Mr. Chairman, just had a couple questions, if that's okay with you. Thank
you. Welcome to it.
Obviously, the uptick, et cetera. You have a fair amount of the NPRs that are sitting in the queue. Currently, I think there's about 453 that are sitting out there. Could you explain to us why we couldn't do some of that on desktop? What your requirements are associated with that is the first part, and the second is the certified wetland delineation program, and knowing that there are professionals in the state that are maybe on the private side, why couldn't those individuals potentially be utilized in that program as well, specifically either for the NPRs or at least for the initial reviews that are being done by DEP in the 404 program?
Deputy
Chair, thank you, Representative. So first question with the NPRs. The idea of doing a desktop review, which I know the Corps has done for decades, wasn't initially used because it was a new program. And the idea being, obviously, we're under a spotlight and we want to make sure we get everything correct. We do believe we're in a more comfortable place now where we can move toward that. There are a lot of areas where you have good aerial imagery. I mean, I just looked at a site Friday. We had aerial imagery from 1942, every decade up until last year. And we had thermal imagery twice, once in the 90s and once in the early 2000s, and LIDAR imagery. So a lot of that we're getting now comfortable with being able to go, nope, that's clearly an isolated wetland. Isolated wetlands are not waters of the United States. So we are moving forward with that, and I think you'll see that occur more often as we get more comfortable with that. Again, I don't want any of my folks to kick out a permit that's going to put an applicant at liability. We want to make sure that it's accurate and we're not handing off some potential liability issue because we didn't do it right. For the CWE purpose, On our approved program, the EPA specifically stated DEP personnel must be the individual that delineates a wetland line. So I can't technically use private, but we are starting, now that we've trained all internally, starting to look at doing the external trainings like we used to do for wetlands back in the day, so that that way, hopefully, the private consultants are then seeing exactly what we're looking at in the field from a training perspective, so that way the applications coming in hopefully cut down on the RAI process, cut down on the questions back and forth, and cut down on, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, there's been internal debate on a few sites that have gone round and round. I've sat in on a couple. So that's what we want to do, is get that training out to the private entities so that, you know, you have, all of them have a very good idea of exactly what we're looking for, and it's just going to make it easier on the front end.
A follow-up would be, there's been conversations, as you can imagine, about statutory timelines associated with review, and I realize that there are federal requirements for the review as well, whether it be the public notice or things along those lines. If you were to be required statutorily to perform similar to the ERP program is currently, what would the department need in order to gain that ability? Is it just FTE? Is it, you know, what would we need to do to supply you with the opportunity then to perform under statutory timeframes?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, so under federal requirements for the noticing provisions, which you mentioned, there's also a federal requirement that there can be no default permitting, period, in any delegated program. And that's kind of how ERP works. If the application is complete and we haven't acted, then by operation of law, it's deemed to be issued. I mean, we technically do the ministerial act of handing out a piece of paper, but we haven't defaulted on one of those in my 5 years, so I don't want to start now. So I would be interesting, without going too far down the line, I'd be interested to look at what kind of the language would look like, because again, federal bar to default permitting. So if a statute said, you now have default permitting just like ERP, that would be grounds for the federal government to immediately remove the program, or give us the opportunity to pull back the statute, but anything that defaulted during that time, I would assume they would object to. Given the fact that they have that level of oversight, that's why I say I'd like to see language first to kind of discuss what it actually does, and there may be a way to craft it so that it's not default per se, but does put some other constraints. I'm not sure exactly how yet, but we would have to see it and discuss it, and then we'd have to talk to EPA to make sure that we didn't file, you know, something wasn't filed that put doubt on the program, because it is being challenged at the federal level right now. I did want to flag that.
Members, questions? Representative Trunow, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Secretary. Looking at the cause and effect of doing it in-house with DEP, and many might think that, you know, speeding up the process brings on more construction, but how many of those projects were water quality, quantity related, good projects that also got moved forward?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. I will get you the exact numbers. I know quite a few of the ones that I have seen in terms of, even for the development, because with the 404 program, you have to do avoidance and minimization. A lot of those are looking at areas where you see more wetlands being created to offset very specific impacts that are way less than the ones that are being created. I can think of one offhand that it went from, it was a core-issued permit, and had in the area they were looking at 867 acres of wetland impacts, and they wanted to modify, which means we have to do the process all over again. We can't modify a core permit, we have to issue a new, and it went down to 410 acres. But I'll get you the exact numbers in terms of the breakdown on pure development versus creation or mitigation improvement.
Members, questions? Questions? Deputy Secretary, I do have a question. As it relates to the department's point of view, what is an acceptable number as it relates to the backlogs? What is the end goal?
Chair, I mean, I want to understand your question. An acceptable number, you mean in terms of the time to move things through?
No, or in terms of a total number in queue that are...
Oh, total number in queue?
Yeah.
I would hope that no more than 5 to 10 projects is on any one of my CWE's desks. So if you look at 68 times 10, 680 in the queue at some time, because they can be in varying stages of processing. That's what you see in a lot of other programs. Right now, they're averaging 60 or so for a lot of them. And again, with the new positions that come in, we're very grateful to have. It does take a couple months to get someone proficient at this. Very rarely can you grab a person off the street and have them go accurately delineate a wetland line. So for the first 2 months, it's kind of shadowing, and then they handle the simpler projects and then move on. But that would be my ultimate goal.
And that's, you touched on my follow-up. So to get to our goal, you know, what kind of time frame and actions are going to be required to get there? And what do you think timeline, in terms of a timeline moving forward, we're looking at?
Thank you, Chair. I don't think any of my people will view me as soft or lazy, so this number is probably going to make them a little concerned. I would hope by the start of next summer, we're handling what's coming in, what's going out, and the backlog is gone, honestly. I see a huge jump coming with getting these water management district folks on board, right? And then the additional, if we get our LBR request, which would go in effect July 1, I think that would help even keel and let us take some folks that used to work in other programs and put them back in their program and keep it even moving forward. But I would like to see by next June or July that we're not just keeping pace, that we've dug through a backload. We are seeing to that point, there are more and more withdrawals. Withdrawals are coming. And it happened a lot earlier in the program, but we're still seeing it. And this is a message I do want to get out. If an applicant never would have gone to the Corps to apply for a 404 permit, because they're so convinced, we don't impact WOTUS, we don't need a 404 permit, I never would have gone if the Corps had the program. Oh, well, DEP has it now, and I have an ERP over there. I'll just get them to process this too. Just don't clog the queue. And that's what we've said. And that's what you're seeing a lot of the withdrawals coming out going, oh, okay, that makes sense. If I wouldn't have gone to the Corps, why am I clogging this queue, essentially? So I think there's still more withdrawals to come off that pile as well.
Members, do we have any further questions? Representative Overdorf, you're welcome to it.
Thank you. Just one last question is, we've seen in the past where the Corps or the district has had dedicated employees for Turnpike Authority or for large projects, for large companies, et cetera. Is that something that may be helpful to the department if, in fact, you had a large entity that then had a dedicated employee that was specifically to those projects only?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. We did, with the LBR request that that was granted, you know, this July 1, some of the employees we got, four of them specifically, were dedicated DOT employees to handle those. Because, again, very similar types of projects. If a person gets to be an expert at that, let them do that. They can plow through them quickly. We also got a person that was dedicated to the military service. They're starting with Tyndall. The funding agreement is up with the Air Force right now to get that in place, but the idea with Tyndall being the big rebuild. I know there have been discussions of language going on for doing that with other entities that may not be state agencies or sister federal agencies. I think those discussions are ongoing, and so until I see, I think, some final language come out, I'm not going to speculate as to exactly what that would look like, but you are correct that there are federal agencies actually have in their federal regulations the ability to do that. I know there's some private entities in the state of Florida that fund positions not only with the Corps, but also with the Fish and Wildlife Service. So that is, again, to your point, I know there's language floating around and that discussion's ongoing.
Members, questions? Questions? Seeing no further questions, Deputy Secretary, do you have anything you'd like to conclude with?
Thank you, Chair. I always point this out. Obviously, there's lots of questions surrounding the program. I think we have made leaps and bounds of strides in the last few months. We appreciate the support of the legislature last session. Look forward to it this coming session. And as always, if any individual members or if you have constituents that have particular questions and want to reach out, please feel free to get a hold of me. I will never turn down a request for a phone call or a meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Deputy Secretary, thank you for joining us for the second week in a row. We really appreciate the time that you've taken and everything that your department's doing. Members, before we move to conclude, I just want to remind everyone for scheduling purposes, next committee week, we are not, this committee is not on the agenda, so for your own planning purposes, you can be aware of that. Members, this does conclude this week's meeting. Seeing no further questions before the committee, Representative Representative McFarland moves we rise without objection.